Walk across the courtyard towards the library.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to another episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. I'm Athenia, host of your show today. First up on our Beyond the Cover segment, we have local author Glenn Ingvie. As G. William Ingvie, he wrote A Cold, Dark Place to Die, a fun little murder mystery based in Alaska. Later on our show, we have a lively live chat segment where we talk with Celia Whitehead about her story build and tell workshop she's doing in conjunction with the Kodiak Public Library and the KPLA. And we have a little library tip for you as well. Lori Madsen stopped by to talk to us about the Listen Alaska digital ebook and audio book services that the Kodiak Public Library offers. We'll also be reminding you of the Altered Book event going on throughout January and February. We're working with the Kodiak Arts Council on that one. And of course, we'll give you our Community Roar segment, where local Kodiak community members get a chance to rave over some of the amazing reads that they've opened the cover on lately. As ever, it's a great show, so stick around for the next hour. Starting up on our Beyond the Cover segment, where we interview musicians, authors, and other performers living in or coming to Kodiak, we have Glenn Ingvie. Peyton had a break this week, so Nanette Foster could do the KPLA a wonderful favor and interview her friend and local author, Glenn. Let's see what they had to say on this episode of Beyond the Cover on Dog-Eared Reads by the KPLA.
This is Nanette Foster, and I have with me G. William Ingvie, local author of the novels A Cold, Dark Place to Die, Double Double, Oil and Trouble, and A Shot of Arsenic, Please, with a Plutonium Back. These are three books that are actually a trilogy. The one that is currently published in paper is the first, A Cold, Dark Place to Die, an Alaskan crime story. This book is published by Glenn's publishing company, Alaska Blue Publishing, in 2008 and is currently available locally at Kodiak Cost Savers and the Kodiak Public Library. It is also available, as is the second book, Double Double, Oil and Trouble, as an ebook through Amazon Kindle. Glenn is the first name of G. William Ingvie, so we're going to refer to him as Glenn. Glenn moved to Kodiak in 1973 from Massachusetts, not long after graduating from Harvard College. After 25 years of skippering trawlers in the fishing industry, Glenn retired to run his business, Alaska Blue Publishing, and to write. Welcome, Glenn. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure to be here, Nanette.
Tell us a little bit about your writing background.
Well, I've always been a writer ever since I was in college, and way back in the day, I was an aspiring young poet. I don't think I was any good at it, but I got some stuff published in a publishing house called the Slumgullion Gazette, which was out of Springfield, Massachusetts, by a bunch of people from Springfield College. So that was kind of my first venture into the publishing world.
That's great. So is this your first novel?
I've written other novels, but, you know, after you look at them a few years later, you just don't even dare show them to anybody. They were that bad.
Oh, well, I guess what that's done is maybe given you a little bit of a platform to get to the level that you're writing at right now.
Well, I'll tell you, the entire process is a growing and learning process. Every time you sit down and write something, you learn something because you don't like what you just wrote. So you better learn something after that.
Yeah, I guess.
Self-criticism can be either something that can help you or something that can really hurt you. So you have to, this will fly, this won't, maybe,
That's very good advice for budding young writers or someone who has written and maybe has that moment where they think, maybe this isn't what I should be doing. And you sound like you've had a couple of moments where you think, well, this isn't the level that I want to be at as a writer. How do you push through that?
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing I've always had to keep in mind is that I do this as a hobby. Mm. I don't consider myself a professional writer, but I consider myself a good hobby writer. So I do it for the enjoyment of it, the fun.
Right.
And you know, when somebody reads your book and tells you they liked it, it's really gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
I get letters from people all over the world. Mm. Of all strange places, I have a huge fan club in Papua New Guinea. The world's largest gold mine is there, and everybody at the gold mine has a copy of my book.
Wow.
I've had to send whole orders over there.
Wow.
You know, 50 books at a clatter. It's strange. And all of this, I'm sure, came about through selling books at the Bear Country Bazaar when tour boats come in. And you meet people from all over the world down there. And, you know, if you talk to them for a while, they say, yeah, I met this author in Alaska, so you sell them a book.
Right.
And they get around.
And, you know, most people, or even a lot of people who live in Kodiak, would think, how much of an opportunity would you have to get in front of an international public? But you seem to have found an audience.
There is, and it's strictly because of the tour ship industry here. You know, outside of that, it's a who knew do you meet? And it's a big deal if you bump into somebody you haven't seen for 20 years. That's almost somebody new.
Right, almost.
Yeah.
Well, I want to focus a little bit on the book that I personally have read, which is the first of your novels that was published, A Cold, Dark Place to Die. And just really quickly, the way that I ended up reading this book and getting a hold of it is I was on the boat that my husband skippers, and his whole crew had read this book. And my husband, who hardly reads anything, read it in 2 days. He's like, this is a great book. It's a super quick, easy read. Here, you know, and he kind of tosses it at me. And I said, you know, that name looks a little familiar to me. And I flip it over on the back, and you had your picture in there. And I'm like, that's Glenn.
Yes.
And so you're very famous on my husband's boat.
I'm glad I'm famous somewhere.
Right. In Papua New Guinea and yes. On the Wild Island.
Yes.
The plot is pretty involved, so I don't want to give anything away, but it includes murder, actually lots of murder, drugs, lots of drugs, mafia-style crime rings, political corruption, and even a little hint of a budding romance. It's pretty much the work. Let us in a little bit on the writing process, how that works for you.
Well, the most important thing is you have to start it somehow. And you can start it basically anywhere. You could start it at a luncheon. You can start it at a bar. Mm-hmm. You can start it on a fishing trip. You got to start the story.
Right.
And then you have to know where you want it to get to. You have to know the ending before you do anything.
Okay.
And then you build the chapters. What can we do here? How can we make this digress over here? How do we include this character I want to use? And pretty soon it just starts to take its own form and its own life, really.
Right.
And off it goes. All you have to do is push the pencil.
Okay. You've got some very interesting inclusions of, obviously Alaska. It's an Alaskan crime story. So Alaska is a really big part of this. Kodiak is mentioned as well. Explain to us how you brought your home and personal life into your writing process.
Well, it's just kind of like what Quentin Tarantino did and what Alfred Hitchcock did. I kind of like to appear in my own book.
I noticed that.
And
there you are.
I use a lot of my friends in my books with their permission. And I just ask them, hey, you want to have a cameo in my next book?
Yeah.
I promise you'll be a good guy. And then they all say yes. It's all kind of fun.
Do you have anybody ever asked to be a bad guy?
Oh, everybody. Everybody wants to be a bad guy. But if you turned them into a bad guy, they'd be suing you around the corner.
Yeah, right?
There's a flip side of that coin, too. There's nothing like a good lawsuit to engender sales. Notoriety sells.
Very
nice.
As
long as your name gets out there and people recognize it, you're in good shape as far as financially making some money out of the deal.
Right.
But for me, that's not the issue. The issue is that I enjoy myself.
Yes.
That's more important than money.
Definitely.
You know, sometimes I'm all over a chapter for a couple of 3 days, and all of a sudden one word will hit that all of a sudden makes that chapter work. And then you get excited. You did something. Even surprised yourself.
Right.
That's the nicest part, is surprising yourself with your own ingenuity. It's fun.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
How about Alaska? How important is the state of Alaska, living here and having the experiences you do, to your writing?
Well, Alaska, to me, is the largest part of these books. Alaska is such a grand, huge, and new backdrop for anything you want to write about, that it is the story. It becomes a story. Any actions taken by the characters in the book is because of Alaska. You can't get away from it. It's that large. You know, coming from Boston, you have all this incredible history looking over your shoulder. Well, here we are on this desolate little island. Our history goes back 10,000 years. That's the kind of history we have looming over our shoulders here in Alaska. You know, the East Coast is a Johnny-come-lately deal, really.
Right. Kodiak especially has a very long history.
Kodiak is basically the cradle of civilization for the Americas. The people came here first. Why? Because of salmon. You had food swim past your doorstep once a year, guaranteed, and this made it go. Because of salmon, the Americas became inhabited. And Kodiak is right at the bottom of the list. There are digs that have been dated here on the island to 6,000 years. And the history goes back further than that. It goes back about 9,000 to 10,000 years from the land bridge itself. And Kodiak, it was a lunch stop for everybody. So there you go. It still is.
And it's a beautiful lunch stop, too, which is the nice thing about it.
Oh, God. It's the most beautiful place on Earth, I think.
I agree. I am with you there. So a side note, the Pillar Mountain Golf Classic. This made me laugh. I did not know it was a thing. And some people who are a little newer to Kodiak may not know that it was a thing. But I want you to explain. You brought this up in your book as a mention. Tell us about the Pillar Mountain Golf Classic.
Well, it started out as a barroom bet between Steve Matthew and myself. Scrim is what he's known as. And he said, I got $100 that says I can beat you in a game of golf up the backside of Pillar Mountain. Being bored, fishing season was over, I said, you're on. And by the time it actually happened a few weeks later, there were 45 other people that wanted to do it. So the tournament was on. It was a tremendous fundraiser. We raised the Tour Damietti Scholarship Fund at the high school. It was started by the Pillar. We donated heavily to the Baptist mission out here. They've always been really fine people to deal with and do good work. I got to give them a hats off and a hat tip on the way through here for the wonderful job they do here. There it went. Went for 23 straight years. Tens of thousands of dollars raised for charities and a good time had by all.
And so explain, for anybody who doesn't actually know what this is and hasn't yet read your book, The Backside of Pillar Mountain. Tell us about the process real quick about this Pillar Mountain Golf Classic. Now, there's one hole.
Well, one hole, par 72.
One hole, par 72, starts from?
Just across the street from the VFW. It goes up the old access road on the back of the mountain. Old firebreak road, I think, is what it is. But it's probably the most scenic golf course on the face of the earth.
And there's a 5-gallon bucket at the end? Is that the hole?
Yeah, a 5-gallon bucket. What the Pillar Mountain Project did, Floyd Rice, the commander of the Coast Guard base, both him and his wife played in it every year for the first few years. And after the first year of playing in it at the awards banquet, Floyd Rice put his fist up in a power clench and vowed to 500 people that there will be golf in Kodiak. That spring, construction was started at Bear Valley.
Oh, wow.
Clearing trees and making fairways, and we have just a beautiful golf course. And that was basically Floyd Rice's and his wife's doing.
That's an interesting little piece of Kodiak history that some people may know about. It was mentioned in your book. So let's talk about your characters in your book. On the back of your book, you have a bio here, and your very last sentence says, a lifetime full of colorful characters and adventures needs to be addressed. I have a few of my favorite characters in this particular book. My favorites, I've got, let's see, Danny Slayer, PI, is the main character. And what's interesting about this, Danny he's pursuing the seizure of a very particularly dangerous drug. But Danny himself isn't squeaky clean. You know, he's got his own addictions, right?
Oh, he does, for sure.
He's not Magnum P.I. This is a guy who's got his own demons he's fighting with at times.
Well, I don't know how hard he fights against
Well, that's true.
He gives in a lot. But, you know, all of the characters in my books are real people or composites of several real people, all of whom I've met in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Like I said, this state engenders bizarre characters. Some of them good. I've met more good ones than bad ones. But there have been a few choice apples along the road.
I also thought the interesting little side character of his mother. That just cracked me up. She's so funny. It's like, what is the opposite of what you think of as a normal mom? And she just pops in and out of the book a couple times.
Oh, she's in all of them.
And, yeah, okay.
And that is a character who is based on my own mom.
Is it? I was kind of wondering.
My mom's in her mid-90s. She lives here. She's alive and well at the Senior Citizens Baby Apartments. So that character is really easy for me to write about.
She had causes and marched and...
Oh, yes. And yeah. A world traveler.
World traveler.
You know, is what she's done pretty much her whole life. And where does she end up? Kodiak.
Who would you say is your favorite character to write? Or just pick out one of your favorites.
I like Xavier. He is a real person.
Is he?
Yes. Yes. A wonderful, wonderful, wonderful man. Mm-hmm. I met Xavier in the, early 70s. Uh-huh. He used to come down here and fish Tanner crab with Jim Fisk every year. And tough guy. This was middle of winter for a months-long Tanner season. This guy fished in sneakers, shorts, and a t-shirt. He was as tough a man as I've ever met.
He probably said this was the tropics, didn't he?
Yes. Coming from Barrow, he did think this was the tropics. It was his summer vacation to come down and fish crab on Jim Fisk's boat. But like I said, he was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful man. He has passed away since. Mm. But I'm sure his kids are still around. I hope they find a book, because Xavier is a real person. And while you were talking earlier about influences for these characters in these books, when I was in college, I became very good friends with Robert D. McDonald, who penned the Spencer series. He's a very good writer, him and his wife, Joan. While I was still in college, I toyed around with writing. I was still a budding poet, like I said, in these days. But I watched him write several of the Spencer novels over the years. And he had a great influence on me. And how to write and not let it get to you. Needless to say, I met him in a bar room.
Needless to say.
Yeah.
That's fun. So in creating, you created your own publishing company. I wanted to talk just a little bit about that. First of all, what made you decide to go that route?
Well, the major deal was finances. I had several offers from major publishers around the country, some of the bigger ones. And by the time the dust clears, they want to pay you 2 cents a book. Hmm. I said, not good enough. Mm-hmm. I said, I think I'll see what this is all about on my own. Mm-hmm. See you boys later.
Yeah.
So, and they're, especially when you're not an established author, these people will take you over the coals and leave you basically with nothing while they make a lot of money off you. Like I said, I had several good authors from Penguin and all of I sent 2 years just sending out manuscripts to see what kind of bites were out there.
Right.
And there were lots of them, but I didn't consider any of them good enough. So I just went my own way.
So explain a little bit of the process of self-publishing, maybe for those who are interested in exploring that as an option.
Well, it's a good option, but it's an expensive way to go. A publisher is denoted as someone who puts money into a work of literature. Well, you do plenty of that to promote it. The first time I went with this book, it was through the paper publishing, which right out of the gate is very expensive to do. Number two, getting it distributed to different places is even more expensive. I mean, everybody involved in these processes is picking money right out of your pocket, as much as they can grab. The publishing industry is as ruthless as the music industry is. Hmm. they don't care about you. They care about them, but they will use you. And that's what I kind of objected to. I don't like getting used by anybody, and I don't think anybody does.
Right.
So to avoid the whole issue, I'd rather peel money out of my pocket and self-publish. That's how that worked.
You know, maybe the publishing industry will end up as a side character itself in one of your books.
Well, I haven't picked on them, but I may. They certainly deserve it. I mean, they squelch more good writers than they create just because of their, like everything else in today's world, there's unparalleled greed out there.
Right.
With no consideration for stepping on people's fingers. It's now, not a polite world.
That's a very good point. What about the route of publishing on the internet as an ebook, like you've gone with Amazon and the Kindle system?
I found this to be an incredible way to do it due to the fact that it can be done cheaper and also due to the fact that the entire world is your marketplace. Mm. Like I said, I have a fan club at a gold mine in New Guinea. Mm. I certainly wouldn't have found those people without the internet, or they wouldn't have found me. So you get to a lot of places. I get letters from fans, as you should say, all the time. I get a couple of a month, and they're from all over the place. I've gotten fan mail from Germany, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Japan, Europe, Iceland.
So does that add fuel to your fire and keeping you motivated? Because you're now on your fourth novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the fourth one that I'll acknowledge, put it that way.
Right, yes. Tell us a little bit about your upcoming work.
Well, it's after the trilogy is done. My favorite character besides Xavier, of course, is Lola. A PI cannot exist in today's world without a competent girl Friday. And she deserved more credit in the first three books that she got. So I'm just writing a book with her as the lead character. It's the fourth one coming out. And it's, like I said, murder on the Kamchatka Express. Bound to thrill a lot of people.
I bet it will. And the trilogy right now, where you're at with that, you have paper and ebook published, A Cold Dark Place to Die. You also have the second, Double Double Oil and Trouble, online,
yes,
through Amazon Kindle,
yes,
but not yet paper published. You've got the third completed, and what you're planning on doing is publishing all three of them as a trilogy set. Is that correct?
Yes. They will, of course, be on the e-books, too, since that's immediate. Now, to get these printed up as a three-book set, the trilogy, is going to take me quite a bit of money to do, but I will do it. Mm-hmm. Money can be found. But it's something that should be done, because there's nothing coming out of Alaska these days at all. Nothing. Zip. Alaska's the only place left where there's still room and opportunity for new things to happen. Mm. If you go down below and try to do something crazy or nuts, it's just, you know, it's no crazier and more nuts than what's going on the next town over. But here in Alaska, pretty much any venture you take upon yourself to do, you can do. Mm-hmm. The opportunity is there, and the people in this state are different than other people, let me tell you. I think that's Alaska. It does that to people.
It does.
They see the expanse of this place, the opportunity, the other crazy people running around doing what they want to do, and they say, hey, why not me? And that's the way it works.
What are some last words that you would leave, whether they are aspiring to be a writer or they are an artist or they want to own a business or somehow pursue their dreams or a passion that they have? You have been here for so many years and you've kind of seen it all. What are some words that you would offer that person to just help them in taking that next step to see their dream and their passion become a reality?
Ooh, that's a big question. And one thing I would say that is a must is own yourself. Mm. Don't sell parts of you or your craft or your trade to anyone. Mm. Own yourself. And, you know, the other one is keep at it. If you enjoy doing what you're doing, keep on doing it. Sooner or later, something will come of it.
Well, those are wise and experienced and also inspirational words. Thank you so much, Glenn. Thank you for joining me. This is Nanette Foster. I've been speaking with G. William Ingvie, local author of the book A Cold, Dark Place to Die, and also Double Double Oil and Trouble and A Shot of Arsenic, Please, with a Plutonium Back. These are published by Alaskan Blue Publishing. The first is available at Cost Savers of Kodiak in the public library.
Well, that was a great interview. Thank you, Glenn Ingvie. Thank you, Nanette Foster. And for those of you tuning in, this is Dog-Eared Reads, and that was our Beyond the Cover segment. Up next, we have Lively Live Chats. Savvy listeners might remember that Celia Whitehead was on Dog-Eared Reads last month promoting the library's Battle of the Books Comes Alive workshop. Well, she's back again this month, and now she's talking to us about a program that the Kodiak Public Library Association is working with the Kodiak Public Library on. It's a four-part storytelling workshop held on the third Saturday of every month. Hi, Celia.
Hey, Athenia.
So tell me, what is this Fractured Fairy Tales about?
Well, this is the second in a series of four workshops. They're the third Saturday storytelling workshops at the Kodiak Public Library. And Fractured Fairy Tales, it's all about taking these old tales, these old storylines that have existed for forever, and people know most of these stories, and then changing around the characters or the setting, even the morals about the story, and making it completely new and maybe more pertinent for your life, or maybe just something super fun and different. We did a brainstorm at the beginning of the workshop asking kids what their favorite and least favorite fairy tales were, and we were talking about Little Red Riding Hood and Princess and the Pea and Sleeping Beauty, and Jack and the Beanstalk came up as a least favorite. Some of Aesop's fables, some of the Grimm fairy tales, and then other ones that are in neither collection, but kind of part of that common fairy tale body of work. After we had a discussion about what the participants thought of when they thought of fairy tales, what came to mind, what excited them, or what they really didn't like, we had a chance to look at choosing one tale. We chose one tale and talked about changing it around, completely making it their own story with the same plot points. And so first we mapped out the story as it was originally. Who are the characters? Where does the story start? What's the main action that happens? What things change in the story? How does it end? And then we took each of those points, and the kids got to brainstorm and shout out ideas about how they wanted to reinvent an old story, which most stories are reinvented versions of old stories. We have these plot points and different kinds of story tropes that come up over and over again. But helping the kids know that their voice and their ideas can be just as impactful as any old story that they've heard 1,000 times.
Okay, so what was the story that you guys picked for the plot points?
So the participants of Fractured Fairy Tales chose to work on Jack and the Beanstalk, which came up as the least favorite fairy tale. So, yeah, how can we fix this and make it a little bit more enticing?
Uh-huh.
And so instead of having Jack, they wanted a female lead, which in this case, the anthill was thrown out. We're going to have insects all over the place, insect world.
Oh.
And our main character, instead of being Jack, this poor country boy living with his mother, we had Ant 421, because, let's face it, there's a lot of anonymity in ant colonies.
Right. So let's listen to this clip from the Fractured Fairy Tales third Saturday storytelling workshop held at the Kodiak Public Library.
Those ants who saw it tell the story, I was not there, but they told me about Ant 421 and the sunflower. Ant 421 wished she was special so she could have a name.
The story takes place in the anthill. It's fall, and the ants are all busy bustling around, getting ready for winter. Now, the queen was very bored of her pet pill bug, which was not doing anything but curling up in a ball. So she springs in her servant, 421, and she tells her to sell the pill bug to get lots of sunflower seed for the winter food. 421 leaves the anthill to go to the all-bug marketplace where she can trade the pill bug. The cockroach wants the pill bug because he thinks it'll make a nice decoration. He doesn't know that the pill bug is still alive. So she trades the pill bug for bright pink sunflower seeds that the cockroach had found in the trash. She thinks that bringing pink sunflower seeds, a rarity, to the queen will make her special. So 421 brings the seeds back to the queen. When the queen sees them, she says, "I love them. I want to plant them right away." So 421 and the queen go up to the top of the anthill and dig a small hole and plant the seeds. Everyone goes to bed because it's nearing night. But when they wake up, big roots are coming down through the ceiling. The queen calls in 421 to her bedchambers, and she tells her, "Why? Why did you give me these things? Now there's roots coming down through all the holes and tunnels in our ant colony. You need to go up there and cut it down so that all the roots will go away." 421 goes up to the top of the anthill and sees the giant sunflower. Now 421 thinks a minute, and then she says, "If I need to cut it down, I think I need to climb it first." So she climbs all the way up, determined to fix the terrible thing she's done. Puss in Boots is at the top, sunbathing. Great surprise. But 421 keeps her head. She thinks, "I need to get this cat down here, down off the sunflower, before I can cut the sunflower down." So she bites Puss to get him off the sunflower, but that just makes Puss angry, and he yowls and starts clawing the sunflower to pieces to try to get to Aunt 421. Seeds rain down. The sunflower falls. 421 is safe, and Puss in Boots runs away. The ants all cheer, happily rejoicing that Puss in Boots is gone, and the sunflower is gone as well, so the roots will all go away. There's sunflower seeds all over the ground, and they're gathered and stored for winter food. 421 is a hero, so the queen gives her a name, Anastasia, and the heir to the throne.
That I hope you enjoy.
That was fantastic. Thank you to those girls who helped out with the Fractured Fairy Tales Storytelling Workshop at the Kodiak Public Library and for sharing it with us here at Dog-Eared Reads. So the same kind of idea of a boy that's underappreciated finding his strength and getting redeemed from the people of his town, Jack and the Beanstalk, then the same of Aunt 421 who goes to find sustenance and saves the day and redeems the town and returns a hero.
Aunt 421 really wanted to prove herself, to somehow make a name, and actually, in fact, get a name. This was the big goal. She wanted to have her own name, her own unique identity, which I think is really telling of a lot of kids kind of in late elementary, early middle school. You're figuring out, who do you want to be? How do you want to act in the world? Who are you? So Aunt 421 has some problem solving to do, right? How to get rid of the sunflower and how to get rid of Puss in Boots, because you can't have a cat land on top of your anthill. I mean, that would be pretty catastrophic.
And they figure it out by the end. It ends well.
So I'm looking at different choices about which choices would be considered wise choices or unwise choices and how your actions after that choice can have an impact. Yeah.
Uh-huh. For all those people who might be interested in going to the workshop that you're having on January 16th or on February 20th, tell us a little bit about the format.
Yeah, so the next workshop is on January 16th, coming right up, and it will be Tales from Around the World. These workshops are from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. Tales from Around the World will be at the library in the craft room. And usually we start with a little bit of an introduction and kind of an imagination warm-up. Usually some kind of fun game. We do some really great storytelling games to get things going. Mm-hmm. And then for this next workshop, we'll be exploring a few different tales from around the world and choosing one to work on as a group, to do a group retelling of the tale.
So 3 hours, that gives you a good chunk of time to brainstorm some ideas and play some storytelling games and come out with a project at the end of it.
Creation. And technology is not my thing personally, per se, but it really draws in a lot of my participants. We're looking at kind of 9 to 16 as the age group, although that's flexible. So we've been bringing in digital voice recorders and camcorders and getting some filming and some recording as part of the project. And I think that really helps bring it alive and bring it out to the community. We've shared projects with the Arts Night at the library, and we've shared projects here, right here on Dog-Eared Pages.
And we're very grateful to have you here on the show. So next week, January 16th, Tales from Around the World from 1 to 4, at the Kodiak Public Library. And then in February, that's the last of your four storytelling workshop. And what's that one about?
On February 20th, it's going to be a little bit different. The biggest difference being that it will be held at the Teen Center. So we're looking at doing some community outreach, getting more venues involved, and hopefully some slightly different audiences and participants. The program will be a mini story slam. So it will be, as many know, the Galley Tables programming happening in Kodiak. It will be like a Galley Tables for kids, getting kids and students excited about telling their own stories, about finding what stories in their lives have really made a difference for them and reach further than the moment of action. They have like ripples that come out into the rest of their lives and being able to tell that in front of an audience.
That's great. I know people in town love the Galley Tables night, so I'm really excited to see what the kids can do with storytelling. I bet there's some great stories out there you kids might have. Okay, so for those kids and teenagers out there that are interested in telling a story about their lives, you gotta come out for the February 20th Story Slam at the Teen Center. And if you come out and do a story, we could air it here on our show on Dog-Eared Reads. What do you say about that, Celia?
Yeah, I want to have everybody's stories out in the community. I think everybody has a story to tell, no matter how old you are. And this is a great opportunity to give it a try. It's a free workshop. So again, that's the Teen Center on February 20th, a mini story slam, galley table style, telling your own stories. We appreciate audience members, but also anybody more or less between 9 and 16 who is interested in working on a little public speaking, interested in how you craft a story and tell it to an audience. And I know that Galley Tables does not have a age limit, so Galley Tables could be the next stop.
Right, yeah. Start here at the Mini Story Slam and work your way up to the Galley Table stage. So February 20th, if you're interested in the Mini Story Slam at the Teen Center, that would be something to mark on your calendar. Also, Celia, again, is going to be just at the library doing a lot this month. She's also going to be performing at Sunday Sounds on January 24th. Celia, I didn't know you were a musician.
Well, I haven't had a chance to perform out much since I came to Kodiak, but I've done a lot of it in the past. I think it will just be me and my guitar this time, and we'll be doing some songs of the sea and some old folk songs and some more contemporary music and a few originals.
Wow, yeah. That sounds fun.
A lot of my music I learned from my grandfather, and it's got a good comic twist, so hope to see you there.
Fun sea shanties, you got a few in your bag.
The Clam Digger's Lament. Around here, apparently all clam diggers are lamenting.
True. So January 24th at Sunday Sounds, come and see Celia and her guitar. Thank you, Celia.
Thank you so much, Athenia.
Do you like to read? Do you like to listen to books? I do. Hi, I'm Lori Madsen, and I would like to tell you about Listen Alaska, a free service offered by the Alaska Digital Library, in part from the Kodiak Public Library. It's accessible from a computer, tablet, or a phone. You can listen directly from the browser on your computer or use an OverDrive app on a smartphone or a tablet. They have featured collections that include fiction of various genres for all ages, a wealth of nonfiction titles, and all the Battle of the Books. You can borrow up to 10 items at a time, and you can put anything on hold that'll be ready for you once it's checked back in. The lending period may vary from title to title, but the maximum is 21 days, and they can be renewed. A really cool feature of this service is when the audiobook or ebook is due, it disappears from your device. No more overdue fines or worrying about getting that item back to the library on time. To get started, you will need to have an active library card to borrow titles. Please visit the Kodiak Public Library and get your PIN, personal identification number, that will allow you to sign on to the Alaska Digital Library and start using it. What? Don't have a library card? Any permanent resident of the Kodiak Island Borough is eligible for a library card. New patrons are asked to show two pieces of identification that have their current mailing address in Kodiak on it, and parental permission is required for children under the age of 15. But once you have your PIN and your library card, you can log into OverDrive on your computer. The URL is listenalaska.lib.overdrive.com. Or do a simple search for Listen Alaska, and you will find the URL. You can also download the app from iTunes or an Android source, and it's a great way to read more and keep learning. I like to listen to a story while I'm driving and then continue reading it later at a more convenient time. Or with more difficult text, I listen as I follow along in a book. Quite often, our public library has the print version, and then I borrow the audio version from the digital library. It's all free, and it's available 24/7 from Listen Alaska. Check it out.
Thanks, Lori. That was the Lively Live Chat segment of Dog-Eared Reads. Now, before I head into the next section, I want to talk to you about something that the Kodiak Arts Council and the Kodiak Public Library Association are excited to be offering you. It's the Altered Book Show. We're hoping you artists out there are finishing up your art projects so you can get your entry forms in by the end of the month. All that art is going to be on display at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium throughout the month of February. And February 5th, next first Friday, is when we're having the art show opening. Stop by between 5 and 7 p.m. We'll have some food and drinks. We'll have some members of the KPLA there to meet and greet you and have membership forms in case you want to become a member of the KPLA. And of course, come and check out the art and see what the local Kodiak people can turn books into. It's going to be great. There's posters and entry forms for this event all over around town. And of course, you can always visit kodiakartscouncil.org for more information. Now, let's head into the Community Roar segment of Dog-Eared Reads and check out what Kodiak members have on their bookshelves.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another in our series of book reviews from the wonderful selections in the Alaska Room of your Kodiak Public Library. I'm Bob Ross, and it is my privilege and pleasure to be your guide today as we explore Doug Vandegraaff's book, A Guide to the Notorious Bars of Alaska. This 172-page, softbound book, written in 2014 and published by Epicenter Press Incorporated, contains a detailed listing of 135 different bars from 53 Alaskan locales, as far north as Manly Hot Springs, as far west as St. Paul Island, and as far south as Ketchikan. To have been included in this book, Mr. Vandegraaff decided the bar must have been in continuous operation for at least 25 years, remained located in the same city, town, or village, and either be named the same or still be known by its former name. Mr. Vandegraaff devotes 7 pages to laying a concise historical overview on alcohol use in Alaska from the Russian purchase to present. He notes the 2 periods of prohibition, the first from 1868 to 1899, and the second from 1918 to 1933. He acknowledges that though some bars in Alaska date back to the 1880s, that for the purpose of his book, the author considers the ending period of the most recent prohibition as having effectively reset the clock on how old a bar can be. Therefore, the earliest date a liquor license for a bar in Alaska could have been issued is April 7, 1933, the day beer and wine were once again legal to sell in Alaska. I like the concept of this book from more than one standpoint. His descriptive information on each bar makes it interesting reading, especially if that particular bar is to be visited or the subject of research. In my early years, I drew a lot. I had both a series of interiors of a number of bars and churches from a few locations in Alaska. It will be fun one day to see if any of my bars drawn are listed in this book. I very much enjoyed the walking tour accompanied by the author of 4 of the Kodiak bars described in his book. The 5th bar is the Rendezvous, and it was too far out of town for a walking tour. The B&B still offers the patron or researcher a view on how many Kodiak businesses were made on skids, enabling them to be moved from one part of town to another. The Mecca was different from all other bars operating in the 1940s. Licensed in 1940 to Roy F. Snyder, the Mecca Cocktail Lounge opened June 23, 1941, boasting sliding doors made of mahogany, Philippine mahogany wainscoting around the lower part of the walls, parchment murals in soft pastel colors, a tile dance floor, a piano, a jukebox, private booths of leather and chromium. A tough rule of the house was that any man without a lady was not admitted. From the Kodiak Mirror, February 1942 census, there were 395 couples and 115 single women living in Kodiak. Of this last group, 10 were older than 65 years of age. There were 225 single men and thousands of soldiers, sailors, and airmen. This made the Mecca different. Mr. Vandercraft is a cartographer, a map maker by trade. For the past 2 years, I have sought a map of the pre-1964 Kodiak that could be compared to the current or post-1964 Kodiak. Although Mr. Vandercraft says his maps of the town did not make it into his book, they are readily available on his website, whose address is contained in the book. For me, as you might imagine, finding a map of downtown Kodiak with both the new and the old placement of streets, key landmarks, and bars was beyond my expectations. If you are traveling around Kodiak, interested in local Kodiak history, or like to read about notorious businesses of the state and local areas, this book should be considered strongly. It is a must-have if you are trying to understand where the old and new locations of Kodiak Business District lay. I hope you have enjoyed this book review of Doug Vandercraft, A Guide to the Notorious Bars of Alaska. I hope you will again tune in when we have another in our series of book reviews from the collection of the Alaska Room of the Kodiak Public Library. I'm Bob Ross, and I thank you for listening.
Hi, my name's Brian Large, and I just read a really good nonfiction book called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Publication date, July 1st, 2014. Why we do what we do in life and business. The automatic behavior is a habit that's good or bad. It can grow from a repeated decision lodged into the basal ganglia subconsciously. Animal trainers have figured out the habit loop. It's a cue, a routine, and then a reward. If you snap your fingers together, will your dog go and do this? And then what's his reward? That's a habit loop. In this book, it explains how the habits form in individuals, organizations, and social groups. There's so many good stories in here about people making a new habit and basically transforming their whole life around. If you want to change the habit loop, keep the cue and recognize the cue, isolate the cue, and change the routine to something new. This technique has been around for a while. It may be familiar to recovering alcoholics or people that stop smoking. This guy took a note of why he was eating a cookie. He just took note of when, what time it was, where he was. Check in with himself with his emotional state, who was around, and what action preceded. And just by himself taking notes of his own behavior, he realized that it was a habit of who was around because he was bored. So there's football coaches out there that have harnessed this rule of habit change, and they turned all these losing teams into champions by putting their good habit to a routine. Habits beat thinking in football. Champions have proved that. And Olympic swimmers like Michael Phelps, he did some keystone habits that made him such a success. He talks about him losing his goggles and having to count how many strokes he was to the wall and looking up, and world record happened. This is Brian here. You've just been listening to me do an audiobook review on The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. It's available at Listen Alaska online as an ebook or as an audiobook. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Katie and Nia's Book Talk. Also Abraham. Today we have a very special guest with us. His name is Abraham, and he apparently loves the book we're reading today.
I don't think he read it. I think he just listened to it on an audiobook.
I actually read it 3 times. It means a lot to me, and you're going to make me cry.
Okay. The book we're doing today is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. This book consists of many characters, of which include Jem and Scout. They are brother and sister, and they live in a sleepy southern town in Alabama. Jem and Scout are the son and daughter of a very prominent lawyer in their town named Atticus Finch. Atticus Finch is actually my favorite character. He is such a good person, and he's humble.
He's the epitome of good.
Are you going to talk, noble. Abraham?
I'm listening to you. I'm respectfully listening, and then I'm going to use my input.
You don't have to raise your hand to talk,
You can
Abraham.
Just talk. We meet our hero's brother when he was 13, and she was a few years younger.
No.
Yeah. She was, like, 4 years.
Very briefly, it starts with, like, a little flashback of when they're older. Not a flashback. A flash forward, let's say.
Flashback forward.
Yes, there you go. So they are older, and it's talking about how the whole story started. And they mention, like, oh, I thought it started this way, but then Jim thought it started another way. I'm recalling this all from memory. And so then it goes back.
That's why it's so off.
Yeah, that's probably why. And so then it goes back to the very beginning of when they are really small, and they're little children, and then as they grow up.
Yes, that is the layout of the story. Thank you, Abraham.
Yes, it is.
And the main point of the story is that there's this big trial going on for a black man who was said to have raped a white woman, but he was actually innocent. And so the whole town hates Atticus, and Scout doesn't have a clue of what's going on. And this kind of leads us to the theme of
loss of innocence.
Yes, and, like, growing up.
Okay.
Abraham didn't really look too much into this book because he didn't study it with a class, so he's not going to say as much.
That isn't true. Okay, and just because I didn't read it in the class doesn't mean that I didn't look into the book and find
Loss of Innocence was a big one.
Was it?
Did you miss it?
Commando Scout.
It's kind of like Scout. She was really little, and she was like, oh, yay, this is all fun and games. And then she was like, wait.
People actually are real, and people actually get accused of things.
And people actually hate me and my family.
No,
and everyone doesn't like anyone, and this is just a racist town.
It's
so true.
No, I kind of see that, but then I also think it's not like as much of like a loss of innocence and such a drastic, like, oh, what is life when I was young and happy, but now everything is horrible. It's more like...
That's literally the book. That's the first part of the book. She's having fun and playing in the summer with all her friends. That's just the whole point of the book.
Okay, first you call him Jem. Now you're saying the book is about the loss of innocence. Like, are we even reading the same book?
His name is Jem. It's not Jim.
How do I know you didn't read Mockingjay instead?
Like, I did read Mockingjay, and I don't remember a black man being on trial for rape in that book.
Another theme in this book is, like, the idea of guilty versus innocent, but it kind of doesn't matter in this book. It doesn't matter whether the guy did it or not, because the whole town thinks he did it.
Yeah.
And they're all racist and prejudiced against him.
That's a really good point, because it's like,
he may be innocent, but not in the people's eyes.
Yeah, and so even though he is innocent, we think that, you know, there should be justice, but there isn't.
That was a disappointing part in the book.
I really wanted
the guy to get... Spoiler alert, he goes to jail.
Yeah.
He goes to jail, and you're really hoping that he gets off, and you're like, oh, but that was such a good defense, Mr. Atticus Finch.
Another thing, something I also got out of the book is from the aftermath of the court when Atticus is representing the black man and he gets accused and he's sent to jail. And it's really sad because this whole entire time, you know, we think that, oh, he's going to be set free. Atticus is going to do an amazing job.
Justice will prevail.
Yeah, exactly.
But no.
Even though Atticus does an amazing job, he is still found guilty. And a comment he makes that I really thought was really interesting was that he says the same thing that they've been doing for years, a really long time ago, that they're doing now and that they will keep doing to not, you know, not be just and instead be prejudiced.
And I feel like one of the themes in this is a loyalty, because Atticus is so incredibly loyal to his job, even when he gets threatened and he gets so much hate, he keeps on with it because that's his job. And if he didn't do his job, then he couldn't represent the people or his clients. And then also with loyalty is Scout's loyalty to her father. All the kids in her classroom are like, oh, your dad's this horrible person. And she just kind of beats them up.
But then she gets over it. She grows up and has a
experience
of innocence.
Yes.
And then she, like, decides... I'm sorry. That was very drastic. I am annoyed about that point. I disagree with it. But, and then she decides not to beat
them
up.
That's, like, the whole point of
the book. Why do you disagree with the entire theme of the book?
It's... Okay, so when I think of loss of innocence, that makes me think of Lord of the Flies. Like, oh, no. Loss of innocence because we killed two of our best friends. But in this, it's,
that's
like...
Just that's the stupidest book I've ever read.
I love that book.
That says something about your taste.
Yeah. Ray Bradbury? Wait, wrong guy.
No, I hated Fahrenheit 451.
Fahrenheit 451.
We're just reviewing all sorts of books.
Okay, all the books that make us read in school suck.
Except for this one. This one was a good one. It actually had a good plot.
The sequel sucked.
To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah, let's... Wait, let's mention...
I haven't read that yet.
I've read part of it.
Okay, so the sequel to this book is set...
To Set a Watchmen.
Yeah, to Set a Watchmen. set after.
Yeah.
And
To Kill a Mockingbird.
It's set after To Set a Watchman.
Some people say it was written before.
It is written before.
And there's a huge controversy because she didn't want it released. Now that she's old, people think that, like, lawyers and people are taking advantage of her and making her, like, release
the book
when
she
doesn't.
She is good writing. At writing.
I know, but, like, there's lots of controversy about whether she even wanted it out.
Yeah.
Okay, and back to her good writing. The characters in this book are really relatable. Like, in each of us, we have a bit of Scout, like, wanting to stay a child forever. And each of us has a bit of Atticus, like, wanting to do the right thing. And then we all have Mr. Ewell over there, like, making
trouble.
And then
a lot of us have Boo Radley in us.
Oh,
we hide in... That is so true. We hide and we're antisocial and just live on the internet and don't... Well, not like Boo Radley didn't do that.
Okay, let's talk about Boo Radley. The listeners might not...
Okay, so in the beginning of the book, you think the whole book is going to be about this Boo Radley character. He is supposed to be like this scary person who like hides in his house and like eats dead animals and stuff and is really weird and gross.
Yeah, and he's been there like a really long time, and so Scout and Jem decide to act it out with their best friend and
like go in the house and send him notes and stuff.
Yeah, so they're really disrespectful without even knowing it. And
yeah, because all they've heard is gossip about him and no one knows the actual story. So then at the very end, they actually meet Boo Radley and he's actually a nice person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yay!
So that was nice how that tied back.
They actually live, like, on the same street as him, right?
Mm-hmm, they live on the same street. Another reason, I think the reason I like this book, I understand from your point of view, from analyzing it and finding the message, which I guess I can see that it is a loss of innocence. That makes sense to me. I see that now.
Thank you for giving in.
Yeah, I'll give in.
We're always right.
But that's the reading experience. We don't all have to agree. I can see your point of view.
So what do you think the theme of the book is?
I didn't have to find a theme, but I loved about it. What I love so much were the characters and the way it is written, the whole dynamic between Scout and Jem as they grow up, and just how his moods and how he acts. And
oh my gosh, one of my favorite parts is there's the start of a chapter and it's like, Jem was 12, he was unbearable.
So true. All the characters, Miss Maudie and the man, I forgot his name, he has...
What's their cousin's name or their best friend's name or whatever?
Oh, Dill. Yeah, and Dill, who's just is really funny. I just
Dill
wish I was Dill.
Dill is my favorite. I love Dill.
Dill's amazing. And then Atticus. Oh, and their
aunt. Aunt
their
Alexandra
aunt.
And their cook.
She's
Calpurnia.
Okay. Oh, I love
Aunt Alexandra.
I love
is like
the cook so much.
Oh, what was her name?
Calpurnia.
Calpurnia, yeah.
Yeah. And I think the reason it's read and used so much and is such an American classic is because you can get so much out of it. There's a theme. But then there's also, I think it's a really good representation of what it was like back then. It could also be seen as a historical piece of how people, almost how sad it was and how, you know, prejudice and how that was really prevalent and how they didn't really think about it. It was just there. It was part of their culture. And also it can be seen as just a great piece of work. The writing, it's so beautiful. I can't help but make a metaphor. It just seems like this watercolor. It just goes everywhere and you just see all these images. I just love it. That's why I've read it so many times.
I feel like kids in schools feel like they're forced to read this book so they don't take the time to realize it is actually a good book and good writing. And they're just like, oh, we were forced to read it in school. It's horrible.
It's kind of like they think of it as a textbook. It's not like you go, man, this textbook has so much watercolor in it.
Good. I like that. That's funny.
I think we should talk about how Scout represents the mockingbird because they say it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. And then she's kind of a mockingbird because they say you can't kill a mockingbird because they're innocent.
There's a mockingbird in every chapter.
What?
If you read every chapter, there's a different mockingbird. Metaphorical.
Oh.
Anyway, go on.
Oh, and how it's a sin to kill a mockingbird because they're like innocent and they do good things and she's innocent, so.
I didn't see any of that. But okay.
Yeah.
You didn't
that's why it's called class. To kill a mockingbird.
So
that could also be
her,
Boo Radley.
A loss of innocence. Guess what? She's murdered at the end.
No, I think it's in every chapter, there's a different mockingbird that, like something happens to or something. It needs to be protected, and it's really interesting to look for. It's really
wait,
cool.
I thought she was the mockingbird.
Are there
different versions of her?
No, it's not one person. That's the mockingbird. It's like the mockingbird
it's also
being
like,
corrupted.
It's also Tom Robinson, too, because he's innocent. Oh. And then they end up killing the mockingbird because he dies. Or is guilty.
This
so
is sounding way too much like Lord of the Flies.
And anyway, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you, Abraham.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to ruin other books with my uncultured opinions.
All right. Like Nia said, we are out of time. But thank you for tuning in to another episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the Kodiak Public Library Association. If you're interested in sharing a book review with us, or you want to become a member of the KPLA, or even if you want to just see what the Kodiak Public Library Association is up to, visit us at www.kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, and you can email us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com. This is your host, Athenia, signing out.